Hello, this is Maxim Aristavi from Ukrainian Spaces. This episode we will start a bit differently. We wanted to share a call for help and solidarity that our friend and prominent Ukrainian chef Olya Hercules recorded in the first hours after Russia unleashed a man-made flood on southern Ukraine. Please share, listen, speak up, and help us to ensure that the Russian Empire faces justice for these unhinged crimes against humanity and our planet. Our regular episode will follow after this message.
Good morning. I haven't done a video like this for a while, and I really was hoping that I would need to. But they blew up the dam in New Kakhovka. Not a lot of people know how much suffering and ecological upheaval they've caused when they built it in the 1950s. So it was part of Stalin's plan for transformation of nature, because, you know, subjugating people wasn't enough. They had to subjugate nature as well. So they built all these dams. They created the reservoir, which caused so many villages. They flooded so many villages in the 50s. About 30,000 people had to be evacuated and given only 3 days to evacuate in the 50s when they built the dam and created the reservoir. The beautiful Dnipro floodplains were flooded. The ecological system was broken. And today, they, with no warning to people, to anyone, they just blew it up, creating another ecological disaster, another human disaster. And my heart is broken. How can they hate life so much? And today, I guess, apart from urging everyone to keep supporting us, I appeal to all of the eco warriors of the world, because I feel like there hasn't been said enough. There hasn't been enough support from you. Please, they are ecological terrorists. They're terrorists in every sense of the word. Right now, cattle are being drowned. People, of course, are losing their homes. But there is irreversible damage happening to you know, everywhere. I can't even explain how much what is happening there. It's horrible. And I just really need you to speak up and to just say it. Russia is a terrorist state. And apart from everything else, they're ecological terrorists as well. And I'm beginning to be scared of what they're capable of, because they're incredibly stupid. There's no logic in what they're doing. They're just a death cult that want to destroy. And I need everyone to speak up, please. And to keep helping us, to keep helping the people, to start making plans on how we can restore ecology all over Ukraine, how to demine, how to deal with what these floods are doing to people, to animals, to plants. Sorry, it's a bit of a rambling message, but I'm just totally, totally heartbroken today. Thank you for your support so far, and I really hope that you keep on supporting us further. All my love.
Hey, Maxim.
Hi, Valeria. We're usually never do this, especially lately. Don't go unannounced, don't plan live shows just, I don't know, 30 minutes before. But it feels like this is the right time to do.
Absolutely. And we actually are super grateful to Alim, our guest for today, for agreeing to do it as well live, so last minute, because we were going to record this, pre-record this and release later, but Maxim and I thought that it was really important right now for us to be particularly present on a platform like Twitter, where we have seen a lot of strange conspiracy theories and disinformation around Ukraine spreading particularly virulently this week. So that's why we're here today.
Absolutely. It feels like goddamn deja vu, you know, all these days, because this is definitely the most intense, the most painful, the most stressful I personally have felt since the 24th of February. Not only that, but also because I find myself in the similar situation where I want just to go somewhere on a busy corner of some very busy foreign city and scream so loud because it feels like nobody listening and Ukrainian voices are not being amplified and whatever we say is just not being heard.
Yeah. And the other thing is, of course, the fact that, you know, we've been doing this with you, this particular thing that we're doing right now, the podcast itself, since the beginning of the full-scale invasion. And we started it because we were so frustrated that people were not listening to Ukrainians and not taking what we were saying seriously and going to the usual Russia expert who is probably sitting somewhere in a Western country who has studied the region through learning the Russian language. And, you know, we are here again. And it's, I know that you've been writing a lot about it. I know that a lot of people have been really frustrated about it. I know that Timothy Snyder has been elevating a lot of the voices of Ukrainians, which a lot of Ukrainians have also noticed. But we are once again left to our own devices of having to communicate and fight back against Russian propaganda and disinformation on various platforms, including the media ourselves.
I think maybe there's... I mean, of course, in mainstream, especially if some foreign mainstream media have failed us again. It's as if literally over a year of genocide hasn't happened and they defaulted back on their usual patterns of just ignoring Ukrainian voices and defaulting to this both-sidism, he says, she says. But also, I feel like something still has changed. So despite that, it feels very similar to what we experienced during the first days of full-scale invasion and genocide. Some things are different. There are so many people, individuals, who now write to me so many messages saying that they're frustrated as well. And they're foreigners. They're frustrated that they don't see, don't hear, don't read Ukrainian voices in their media. And they see this catastrophe unfolding in southern Ukraine, but they feel like there is not enough coverage and not enough context, and this frustrates them a lot. And this is different. We have so many individual allies that we haven't had before.
Yeah, and one of the biggest individual allies. Well, I think for me it's a big deal just because I think someone of her caliber, and I'm talking about Greta Thunberg here. Using the words that we have been asking everyone to use shows that people do listen to us and people do understand where we're coming from and people do agree with us. And I think, of course, you know, Greta has received so much hate over the years, unsolicited hate. And I think this just shows that it is possible to listen and it is possible to show to everyone else and use your platform to elevate the messages that the Ukrainian people themselves have been trying to get across to the rest of the world for such a long time. You know, just super briefly, I was telling Maxim that I'm writing a post about it just now, but, you know, using the words ecocide, we've been screaming about the word ecocide for such a long time. Saying that this invasion was unprovoked is so strong. And, you know, repeating that this is a full-scale invasion, this has been happening since 2014, and asking for accountability is literally what we have been wanting to hear from a lot of media outlets and maybe some other public figures as well that we haven't yet. So it is possible, but again, it is possible and it's important to keep Ukrainian voices on, you know, explaining Ukraine to the rest of the world themselves, which is why we're here today.
Absolutely. And before we go to introduce our featured Ukrainian for today, I mean, another thing that is different, I feel, Valeria, that despite that, every cell in my body hurts and, you know, I'm shaking inside, where a lot of Ukrainians are doing an important job of explaining as calmly as possible what is happening, what is most importantly needed, because unfortunately, in the disaster zone that now affects millions, there are still no international relief effort. And I'm pretty sure it's going to be the same whether you're listening this as a podcast several weeks later. So helping Ukrainians to help their fellow Ukrainians is now a paramount task. We're going to be linking to a list of fundraisers together with friends and Ukrainian Spaces family. We put together a trusted fundraisers with money that will be directly going not to international humanitarian scams, but directly to people on the ground. So please amplify Ukrainian voices, donate if you can. If you cannot donate, ensure that everyone around you knows that the help is needed. Any all hands on board, on deck. So yeah, thank you so much in advance for amplifying that.
Just before we start speaking to Alim, we just wanted to, as always, thank our patrons for allowing us to be here and allowing us for, you know, allowing for this podcast to continue and for this community to continue. And I just want to say that over the past few weeks, I've been traveling and speaking to a lot of different people in Germany and in Poland and back in the UK. And I just have been hearing so much amazing feedback about what this podcast means for people and that they're listening, that I just wanted to thank everyone who makes it possible for us to do this, because it's worth it and it helps, if not just me and Maxim and Solomia and Tatiana, it helps a lot of other people. So I'm super grateful, and I'm super grateful to receive that feedback and to be trusted by you all to keep doing this together with Maxim.
Alim, if you can hear us, you can unmute yourself.
Yeah. Hi, everyone.
We always ask our guests to introduce themselves the way they want to introduce themselves and tell us a bit who you are, where you come from.
Yeah, thank you again. Thank you for having me. My name is Alim Aliyev. I'm a Deputy Director General at the Ukraine Institute. It's the institution that promoted Ukraine cultural, Ukraine academic program, research, and communicate with another institutions and other countries through the tools of cultural diplomacy. And I'm also the Pan-Ukraine board member and founder of the Ukraine and Crimean Tatar Literature Project, that named Crimean Fig.
Thanks, Anim. I think, I mean, we wanted to talk for this episode a lot about Krim and, you know, Russian colonization. But of course, since since we last talked with you, the Kakhovka disaster happened, and the one of the most massive environmental impacts is going to be on Crimea, of course. So if you don't mind just maybe giving our audience a bit of read how bad this situation can get for your region, for people, you know, for families, you know, so people understand the scale of it.
Yeah. If we said about Kakhovka situation with it, we really don't realize the consequences of it, because if we talked about Crimea, about Crimean Peninsula, it's on the one hand, it's it will be about the total pollution of Black Sea, and on the another hand, it will be a problem with the access to drinking water, to water for the population in Crimea. Yeah. War has a personal dimension for each and every one of us, yeah? And today, for example, my friends or my relatives with their weapons in the hands, in the ranks of the Ukraine armed forces, or in temporary occupation, or in forced migration, or in captivity or in volunteering movement.
Mm-hmm.
Today, war leaves no space to stand aside and contemplate.
What, how it started, like what forced you to go on this path and decide that
mm-hmm.
you need to speak out and you need to tell the story, not only your family, of your own people, to the world, why you decided that this is so important to devote your entire life to it?
Mm-hmm. Recently, my mother told me that when she was pregnant with me in 1987, she went to protest demanding that Crimean Tatars be returned to their homeland from Uzbekistan to Crimea. Yeah. And she jokes that there she laid in me a sense of justice and some current for activism. Yeah. You know, my background is I'm a former journalist, and I also worked in a promoter think tank as a media and communication consultant. But my life divided into parts from 2013, from the Revolution of Dignity, because it totally changed my life. Because during the revolution, I was a volunteer in the Romanska broadcast, yeah, that just launched in Ukraine, and also per night, every night I was on Maidan. And after, when the first day of the temporary occupation of Crimea in 27th of February 2014, me and two of my good friends, Tamila Tashova, she's a representative of president of Ukraine in Crimea now, and Svigil Musaeva, she's an editor of chief editor of Ukrainska Pravda, Ukraine's media. And we founded this initiative because the question of justice, the question of our land and this of question of this illegal annexation, it was a number one, and now it's number one of question in my life. Yeah, because I also have my personal issue. I want to return to my home because during last 9 year, last time I was in my home in January 2014. But my the part of my family is still in Crimea, and they're waiting for us. Part of my friends are still in Crimea and waiting for us. That's why I have any other choice, only to fight with a lot of brilliant people around for our Crimea and for our Ukraine.
Can I ask you a quick follow-up? Because you mentioned Sergei Musaeva, and we had such a also brilliant episode on Kerem with her on this podcast, and so many other Crimean Tatars who are so prominent at the moment, you know, fighting for freedom of mm-hmm. Ukraine. A lot of people, especially foreigners, they cannot actually understand it fully. So maybe you can help us to explain how exactly your Ukrainianness and your work and your fight for freedom of Ukraine, especially in this genocide, is intertwined and connected with your identity as Kremli, as Crimean Tatar.
Mm-hmm. Of course, any clashes, it's so natural for me because my ethnic identity, I am Crimean Tatar. My political identity, I'm Ukrainian. And now we are all of us we are building this new type of Ukraine political nation, and it means that you can have different backgrounds, but you'll fight for your land, you fight for your anthem, you fight for your flag, and you fight for your common future. That's why I it's a new process also of multiculturalism. When Crimean Tatars were an indigenous people of Ukraine. Yeah, yes, we have a different with the Ukrainians language. We have our own language, Crimean Tatar. We have our own religion. We are Sunni Muslims. But we have common values. Crimean Tatars and Ukrainians have the same picture of the future. That's why we're fighting for our common values. It's values of dignity and values of freedom that also crucial for Crimean Tatars.
Thank you for sharing that. I actually shared a bit earlier a story from my own family, because we have ties to Crimea, Kerim, and
oh, nice.
my granddad actually, because he's not Crimean Tatar, but his first language was Crimean Tatar, because he was raised in the Crimean Tatar village. But I shared the story then when Holodomor happened, the genocide, mm-hmm. And it hit the area of southern Ukraine very hard. So my family traveled to our relatives in Crimea, to Crimean Tatar village. And they hid them and protected them because my grandma had three kids and there was not enough food. But it was not always clear for me why would people, and this was also not the only family who traveled, that a lot of families went and escaped to Crimea at that point. It wasn't clear for me at the beginning when my grandparents told me that story, why would people do that? Until later, I learned that Crimean Tatars, even before genocide deportation, they also suffered from Russian man-made famines. And mm-hmm. when the Ukrainians came, they just opened their arms because they just 10 years before that lived through the same horror. And this is why it's so powerful, the words you shared, because this values of survival and fighting the empire together, this is probably what unfortunately we still need to live through, and still that connects us despite that ethnically we might be of different backgrounds.
These are our common traumas, and but the common future also is important.
Absolutely I wanted because you also do a lot of educational work abroad explaining mm-hmm. why it's important for foreigners to learn more about the history of Crimea, but most importantly about the fact that Crimea was never Russian. Mm-hmm. So if you can also tell us a bit, why do you think it's such a central issue of understanding what Russia is, what Russian Empire is, and what Russian colonialism is, through learning how they basically stole and appropriated Crimea from your people.
Yeah. And now, during this full-scale invasion, if we talked about us in international area, now we have a period when we are returning our own names. We are returning our own culture. We are returning our own history. We are returning our own symbols. And when I talked about Crimean Tatars, a lot of people are surprising. For example, a few months ago, I was in Indonesia in advocacy trip, and it's the largest Muslim country in the world. And I talked about indigenous population of Ukraine are Crimean Tatars. And this huge stereotype that Russia, that the Putin regime the best friends of Islam. When I talked about Crimean Tatars and about that first victims of this war were Crimean Tatars in 2014, for different people, it's surprising. And now, yeah, we should talk a lot about us. We should talk a lot about our history, and how year ago we launched an academic online course about history and culture of Crimean Tatars in English in Udemy educational platform that helps to understand why Crimean Tatars such very mass and powerful non-violent resistance in Soviet times and also now during this temporary occupation. Yeah, because I also talk about Crimean Tatars and our history. Yeah, because what Russia do? They want to show that all of Crimean history is a part of Russian history. That why in this history is any parts for Crimean Tatars. Yeah, but they not talk about Crimean Khanate. It was the independent state of Crimean Tatars and existed from 15 till the end of the 18th century. And the era of the Crimean Khanate was the heyday of the Crimean Tatar culture, art, and literature. And it was destroyed by Russian Empire, by Catherine II. And when I talked about Crimea, I also talked that this occupation, it's not the first time when Crimean Tatars had deal with Russia. Yeah, because in 18th century, before the first annexation of Crimea, 95% among all of population of Crimea were Crimean Tatars. Now it dropped to 13%. And when we talked about Russia and Russian imperialism, we also talked about how it affected to Crimean Tatars.
When we started this episode, we started briefly talking about how, you know, some people in the world are listening to us, some maybe not as much. But I wanted to ask you personally, do you feel like the conversation about your people, your country, like your country, your region has changed since the full scale invasion? And do you feel like there's still a lot to be done? And if so, what do you think mm-hmm. people can focus mm-hmm. on now?
Yeah. First of all, what I mentioned that the Crimean topic, and especially the topic of Crimean Tatar, returned to public agenda. In Ukraine, but also in international agenda, it's important because when we talked about the post-war, when we talked about what it means for us the peace, we said that we are confident in our victory as a Ukrainians, yeah? And we, like no one else, want peace because for us the highest value is the value of human life, yeah? But peace and the end of the war will come only after Russia fully withdraws from Ukraine, including Crimea and parts of Donetsk and Luhansk regions, of course. And international tribunal holds Russia accountable for its war crimes, and reparations will be paid by the Russia. And that why any peace agreements couldn't be without Crimea. And it's our main message now.
Thank you so much. And I was thinking, like, you know, Ukrainians who are not from Crimea are already frustrated with hearing all these, you know, stupid takes on what Ukraine should and shouldn't do. And I can't imagine what people from Crimea feel like when they hear, the hot takes from experts in inverted commas from around the world about negotiating and giving up and whatever. So I think it's super important to, keep this message going and afloat. But I also just wanted to ask, how do you feel like people in Ukraine are supporting as well more the cause of Crimean Tatars because of everything that has happened since February 2022? And again, I think for people within Ukraine, how else can we support and keep this topic going?
I think, and because a lot of people, almost all of Ukrainians now understands that what means temporary occupation, what it means forced migration, when you leave your own homes and should just come to another places. And what is important also to say is that today, these days, Crimea, after 2014, has become a role model for the occupation of new territories in 2022. Because from the creation of places of torture in basements, for example, in Kherson, kidnappings of journalists and activists, to attempts to hold of so-called referendums. That's why, of course, the Ukrainians much more better understand what means when the territory occupies, what means why the Crimea is one of the main pillars of the ending of this war.
I think what you also mentioned before about Russia being so transfixed on Crimea, because it also such an intense and very illustrative story of what actually Russian colonialism does when they arrive to lands that are not theirs. So, as you rightly pointed out, and it's a shocking fact to know that just in the span of less than 200 years, Crimean Tatars became almost extinct, and through deportation, through genocide, and through settler colonialism in Crimea. And when Russia stole Crimea back again in 2014, the de facto ethnic cleansing restarted again. And, a lot of Crimean Tatars, including your friends and people, had to leave. A lot of people disappeared in prisons. A lot of people disappeared in general. So what do you think wasn't there in terms of the world understanding what was happening in Crimea during these almost a decade of occupation, what the story was missing?
When we talk about Crimea and the situation in Crimea, we first of all talk about human rights violations in Crimea, but it is only the tip of the iceberg. And when I talked about Russian colonialism, it means that it's about appropriation or destruction. There is no sort. Now I'm talking about symbols, memories, names and peoples, and what does this mean? A few examples. When I talked about identity, what Russians do, violation of the right of self-determination of Crimean Tatar people who see themselves as an integral part of Ukraine. In April 2016, Russians banned the representative body of Crimean Tatar's Majlis, calling it an extremist organization. And the story of my friend Nariman Jilal, he's a journalist, first deputy head of the Majlis of Crimean Tatar people, who is arrested now and as a revenge for Crimean Platform, he was a speaker in Crimean Platform Summit. And Russia arrested Nariman and sentenced him to 17 years in prison. And today, Crimean Tatars and also Ukrainians with a very clear national identities have been viewed as a threat to Russia's security in Crimea. That's why they destroyed tangible and intangible cultural heritage that does not fit into the Kremlin modern ideology. We talked about Crimean Khanate, and one good example is the fate of the famous 16th century Khan's palace in Bakhchisarai. Is a significant emblem of Crimean Tatar culture. And this object tangible heritage is being distorted under the guise of a restoration. Another case with the Crimean Tatar language, for example. Today is Crimean Tatar language one of the disappearing languages according to UNESCO. Only 3% of peoples in Crimea studying Crimean Tatar. That's why Crimean Tatars see the preservation of languages as one of the main tasks these days. That's why Crimean Tatar parents create private initiatives for learning the language as well as speak it at home with their children. You know, it's the same situation was in Soviet times. One more, and it's important, it's a population replacement. Since the beginning of occupation, near 70,000 of the inhabitants left Crimea, and it was a brain drain because Crimean left young professionals, students, businessmen, journalists, artists, etc., etc., etc. But there is a reserve trend. The peninsula is colonized from Russia by state officials, security officers, even pensioners. And according to our data, the number of people who arrived to Crimea reached 700,000 people. It's 1/3 of the total population in Crimea. And when we talked about colonization, is a settlement colonization. And when we talked about identity, it's a destroying identity and creating new simulacrum, like Crimea people. In Soviet times, was Sovietsky Chelyek or Soviet people, Soviet people. Now it's the same Crimean people that opposite to Crimean Tatar and Ukraine strong identity and opposite to Crimean history, including Crimean Tatar history.
Absolutely. So true. And, you know, when you look at the not only what happened to Crimea, but now what is happening in occupied Ukrainian territories, kind of absolutely the same pattern. When they come, they burn books in local languages, they change the geographical names, they force people to flee or they deport them, and then they replace them with Russians. And then as it was with Crimea, just in a span of less than generations, suddenly nobody even remembers that this land was owned by indigenous people. It's suddenly a Russian land, and to the point that even nobody abroad even, you know, knows anything about it. And it's so blunt and brutal, but it works for Russian colonialism all the time. Mm-hmm. So thank you so much again for pointing that out.
Absolutely. And I just wanted to add a tiny thing. I think what you said right now is so important for everyone who's listening. We need to make sure that everyone knows and elevate this message as strong as we can, that settler colonialism is happening right now in Crimea by Russians. And, you know, as you said, it's constantly a reminder of the occupation. And particularly this is striking because it's on the native land of the Crimean Tatars. And it's just, I think, I know it's hard to fight propaganda and disinformation with facts, but these are facts, right? These are actual mm-hmm. things that we all know about and should talk about. And thank you for talking about them.
Yep, thank you so much. And we just commemorated on May 18th the date of the genocide of Crimean Tatar people by Russian authorities, where entire nation was deported just overnight. And I fortunately, as similar with the story of Ukrainian genocide, Holodomor, a man-made famine by Moscow that slaughtered millions of Ukrainians. Still, so many people do not even know that these massive tragedies happened. And that's exactly the reason why Russia is still able to do what it does to the day mm-hmm. because of this mm-hmm. impunity. Alim, thank you. I think we will have to wrap up. I know that Valeria had the final question for you that we really wanted to leave on a hopeful, empowering note, especially on the day like today.
Yeah. We wanted to ask you, how do you see the future for Crimea? What would you like the future for Crimea to be like? And any hopes that you have for your land and for your people's land?
Mm-hmm. First of all, Crimea should be as a peninsula that generated a new census, not only for Ukraine, but for all of civilized world. And Crimea will be returned to be a creative, touristic, cultural peninsula, corner of Ukraine. And also, it means that Crimean Tatar and Ukraine flags will be returned to Crimea. And also, Crimean Tatars can realize their own political and cultural rights. And for me, it also means that Crimean Tatars can preserve their own language, and Crimean Tatars can live in their own land as a people who really one of the, you know, natural components of this land. Because I talk that Crimea, for me, in my blood, yeah? And for us as a Ukraine, for me, in my heart. That's why I hope that as soon as possible we'll meet in our free Crimean Tatar and Ukraine Crimea. We'll gather in Bakhchisarai and we'll build our own common peninsula.
Thank you, Teshekou, and thank you so much for joining us. And it's absolutely something that we 100% agree that there's going to be no free Ukraine without free Crimea, and our victory is going to be celebrated in Crimea together. So thank you so much for finding the time. And for everyone who's listening our show live or who's going to be listening as a podcast, thank you for supporting. Please amplify Ukrainian voices. If we learned anything during this very horrible week following the disaster in southern Ukraine, is that, you know, mainstream institutions default back to their own ways of ignoring Ukrainian voices very easily. So it's our job and mission to remind that Ukrainian voices have to be heard. Our voices matter, our stories matter. And when it comes to Ukraine, the only voices of authority to explain and educate you about anything Ukrainian are Ukrainians. So please remember that. And thank you so much to our Patreon sponsors as well. Ukrainian Space is 100% independently supported by you, by your generous donations. Please keep donating and please bring a friend to support Ukrainian Spaces. This matters more than ever. I think I haven't forgotten anything. And don't forget to click on the link in the description with in the goal and support any fundraisers for disaster zone in southern Ukraine.
Yep. Thank you so much, Alim, for being with us today.
Thank you. Sounds, дякую.
Дякую. The last thing is Slava Ukraini.
Героям слава. See you next time.